I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
All right. This is my vocal warm up.
Just yelling.
The Oscars. Oh, my Zoom just said, "Are you playing music?"
Oh, why thank you.
Thank you so much, Zoom. No, I'm not.
Why does it want to know if you're playing music? What will it do if you are?
It's never done that. It says set up professional audio and audio settings.
Oh, so it thinks it's a backhanded compliment. It's like, are you playing music? Because you should have better audio if you are.
Yeah. Hey, welcome everybody to the Cult Pop Show podcast. This is the final of our Cult Pop Show Oscar season for 2021. I'm AJ, joined by usual co-hosts / I don't know. I'm also the co-host. There's no host. It's just two co-hosts. Richard.
Yeah, we're like the Oscars. There's no host.
Yeah, and our actor friend Aaron, who's joined us for the last few podcasts about the Oscars, and that was actor friend as in two separate things.
Actor slash friend,
correct. To talk about the Oscars. Now, let's first acknowledge that the Oscars already feels like it happened weeks ago now by this point. But the gods of the podcast cycle meant that unless we wanted to record something extra, we had to wait till right now to release an episode debriefing the Oscars, which people are already swiftly losing any interest in. But hey, you haven't heard us talk about it, and that's what matters. We're going to make this fun for you, make it fun for us, make you want to wish maybe it was still happening. Maybe, you know, remember the Oscars?
And to start off, I would just like to ask Aaron, have you ever been in a car accident or had any kind of near misses with car accidents?
Yes, yeah. I have.
Do you want to tell us the story?
And
what street were you on?
I don't remember the name of the road. It was in Christchurch. My father and I were returning a large rotary hoe.
What was her name?
For those of you who don't know, it's a large machine that just like digs up a field, basically.
Right, yeah.
So we were like towing it back in his car, and it was far too big for the size of his car. And we were like driving down the road, and the like trailer started to like fishtail, and it was like swerving, and then eventually like it sort of swung around, and then just like completely like spun the car around. Jesus. So we like ended up on the other side of the road, so that like if there was an oncoming car, we definitely would have died, or someone would have died, and it was pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
And then we walked like 30 meters to one of his clients' houses, and was like, can you come and pick up your rotary hoe? We almost just died.
Well, how old were you? When was this?
I would have been, I think it was like 11, 12.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Sure.
I've had many near-death experiences with my dad.
I wasn't the name of the street. But
it was, you know, it might have, not Marshlands Road. Is it like Preston's Road?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Preston's Road, but the kind of like rural part of Preston's Road.
Yeah.
You know how it's real uneven?
Yeah.
For everyone at home who has this idea of this weird, obscure street in Christchurch.
Oh, yeah. No.
Preston's Road.
That's what people listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
This little tangent very early on brought to you by ASAP Broccoli, a recent ex-fan of Cult Popture who made a stink in our subreddit this week And I guess we're calling him out. It's fine. He can not like the show. Yeah. Anyway, he got annoyed at us for talking about streets and car crashes last week. So now we're going to do it every week.
You must know the specific street.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's how we deal with criticism.
Yeah, this will be our new, like, for a while when we would have guests on, we would say, can you do a New Zealand accent? And now it'll be, have you been in a car accident and what was the street?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a dangerous question to ask a guest, dude. You never know.
Maybe they'll be like, what street it might be.
I'm actually dead. I wasn't a car accident. I'm actually dead.
Yeah. Or like someone's just on a street with a really problematic name. All right. So,
okay.
Yeah, the Oscars, 93rd Academy Awards. It was funny watching them because. So did you watch the ceremony, Aaron? Or?
Yeah, I watched. Thankfully, we recorded it, so I didn't watch it live. So there was a fair bit of fast forwarding going on, especially during the red carpet. My God, that was disappointing. But anyway,
yeah.
My favorite part of the red carpet was when the lady MC was interviewing Stephen Ewan, and she asked him what it was like to like represent. Asian Americans in an Oscar award nominated film, and he gave this answer and she responded with, "Wow, that's such a beautiful answer. I'm just going to take that in for a second." And you, what do you, and then she moved on to the next question. It was weird. If I was to describe these Oscars in one word, I'd say it was fucking weird, man.
Yeah.
I'd say that's two words, but you can leave the fucking out of it if you want.
I'm going to leave the weird out of it.
I feel like every year I'm brought into some new negative emotion associated with the Oscars, whether that's disappointment or shame. And this year I was just like, this is so strange. What the hell is going on? Like almost the whole time.
So they made a lot of changes and whatnot. Some of them I fucking loved. I really like. It took place at Union Station, and the Dolby Theatre. And I liked it. I liked the station that they did it in. The ceremony opened up with Regina King walking to the stage kind of thing, and it had opening credits, and it was shot at 24 frames per second rather than 25 or 30, which would be the normal kind of broadcast standard, and it was shot in like a widescreen kind of thing rather than just 16:9. It's like, yeah, there was a lot of stuff going into it that they said, oh, we're going to try and make this feel like a film. And so yeah, I guess first off we can kind of talk about like the actual the aesthetic of the awards this year, because that was a huge change, and it was, I really liked that, and having more kind of limited seating, and they would bring different people in based on what awards they were up for and stuff. Yeah, what do you guys think of, like, just strictly talking about how the awards looked this year? What do you guys reckon of the changes?
I thought the just speaking purely aesthetically, I thought the like kind of outdoor decorated garden where everyone was in like pre-show was done really nicely.
Yeah.
I liked it. I would echo your thoughts. I think aesthetically the train station was like, I don't know, it was gorgeous, man. Just those like people sitting in booths. Looked nice rather than just like this cramped average theater that you don't really even see. I mean, I guess you see the kind of like decorative booths that people sit in.
Yeah, and I imagine it's more fun for the nominees as well, that you get to sit there with and meet new people kind of thing, like Glenn Close.
So they're watching Glenn Close?
Yeah, being best mates with Daniel Kaluuya now. Like, I think it's like, Because I think I've heard that like the Golden Globes is like the more fun one, because you get fed, you get drunk, you sit around at a circular table with your mates kind of thing. Whereas the Oscars is like, we are the serious one. You're gonna sit there for 3 hours. You're not allowed to get up. And it's just like, yeah, you're sitting in a theater just watching something unfold. You're not really part of it as much. And then they try and do the games with it and shit like that. And they had a little bit of that this year, but we'll get to that. But even like just the way it was filmed, like they would have presenters like standing in the middle of the crowd, and the camera would you know, go up to them and go over their shoulder to reveal who won kind of thing, rather than like, you stand on the mark here, you hold it up at this height and we'll get a close up of it kind of thing. Yeah, AJ, yourself?
Yeah, I think it really called into question, well, it made me question something I've never questioned before, which is, why has it always been the same for 92 years? It was always the same thing. It's always in a big theater and done exactly the same. And it's like, the Olympics opening ceremonies are different, like completely different every year. I know it happens less frequently, but it's still completely different. And this is like, well, why? This is to celebrate the art of filmmaking. And this is the first time they've tried to do something remotely interesting and different with how it looks. I don't know. It made me wonder why they don't do this all the time. And I know in the actual ceremony this year themselves, when they cut across to where they usually have it and Bryan Cranston was there, he was like, this is where it'll be. It's been held here for however many years and it'll be returning here next year. And I was actually like, oh, okay. Like,
yeah.
All right.
It's what the I imagine like Hollywood types are more attached to it, that it's like, you know, there are probably people there that it's like, oh, yeah, I won an Oscar, but it wasn't in the Dolby Theatre, you know? Like, yeah, and so I imagine that's kind of more of a, like, for them kind of thing.
I mean, but they got rid of hosts and dumb sketches and stuff, and it's like,
well,
people
entirely.
Like that. No, but I think there's still room for some kind of fanfare, and yeah. I think maybe that could be achieved by having it at a different location or doing the structure a little differently each year. I think that's way more interesting than having Billy Crystal come on and host.
Yeah.
You know?
I think something I would say, though, is, and something that I was kind of thinking about when I was watching the Oscars, is like, you know, we talk about like, why aren't they like the Golden Globes? Like, people have fun there. But I guess part of the thing is like, the fact that it was more casual is maybe like the casualer feel this year is maybe why for me they fell a little bit flat, was because, like, you know, the reason they have it in the same place and they're doing it the same way is because that kind of feeds into that idea of like prestige and tradition.
These are the most
important
ones.
These are
the
most important ones.
The season, yeah.
Yeah, because we do it the same way we did it 100 years ago, you know, and that kind of feeds into like it seeming important because there's like this tradition of how they do it. So I just wonder if they were to go in that direction, like, you know, how do you balance the two of still being like, we're the best?
I get what you mean. That if there aren't these traditions in place, then it just becomes another, like, it's the Independent Spirit Awards, you know? Like,
exactly.
Yeah, there's nothing to make it stand out. And I think, yeah, but there probably is some way to balance that. It was, I mean, you know, obviously it seems to the idea that it's less important resonated with people because this is the lowest viewed Academy Awards in history since they started recording Nielsen ratings in 1974. So yeah, only 10.4 million viewers. It's normally like even the ones they normally complain about are like high 20s or in the 20s at least. It was initially reported as being under 10 million, which was like a huge thing, but it's slightly over. But yeah, I base my whole year around awards season or like, you know, following these kind of things, and we do these podcasts about it. But I have heard people say that like it was less advertised this year. Like, most people didn't know what was going on because it's such a weird time of the year. But I think as well that there was no real, because, you know, last year was such a clusterfuck for movies anyway, that like I think maybe if there had been like a Tenet or something like that in the Best Picture nominees, because your average person won't have seen any of the Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, it's probably true.
Like last year you had like Joker, a few years ago you had like Dunkirk, like movies like that are like your average person has some kind of investment in.
Next year Dune's gonna win Best Picture, so you know.
yeah it's just kind of like that they're all the films are a little bit more niche this year, and so I think people just didn't care about it so much. Which is a shame. And you'd kind of hope that this year would be like a blip on the radar because of COVID, but I mean we could be seeing the start of like a very sharp decline. And then I think it was on the 90th when we talked about it that I said I think there'll be a 100th Academy Awards, but I don't think there'll be a 190th.
Sure.
That Yeah, it feels like it's going downhill, but I don't know what would replace it or why you would just stop.
Do you reckon saying that is a bolder prediction than AJ saying Dune will win Best Picture next year?
Well, my one takes a lot longer to verify.
Yeah, you might not be around. You might not necessarily be around. Yeah.
Mine takes that's a good thing, Richard. That means mine takes a lot less time to be proven wrong.
Also, just while we're talking about aesthetic as well, the whole thing didn't take place entirely in the train station. There was these little cuts to other places. So they had people sitting in a theatre in London that they like had quite a good live link to, and they could get reaction shots. They had families sitting there as well. It wasn't just nominees. There was like Sacha Baron Cohen and Isla Fisher were standing in Sydney, like with clearly just in a studio or something like that, because they were green screen in front of the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And then you had like Florian Zeller was in France, and they had all these like high quality links because they said no Zoom, but they set up a few major places and then were able to, I guess, just get a camera to a few other places.
What was your guys' favorite like weird thing, excluding award wins? What was your favorite weird things that happened? Because this whole thing had a weird energy.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what I want to focus in on.
One of my favorite, like, I guess, like, weird things, and it wasn't so much weird, but the when they crossed to Bong Joon-ho in South Korea, he was in a cinema there, and he gave this incredible speech. And I think that was when he was announcing Best Director, I think.
Halfway through the show for some reason.
Yeah. And it was cool because he gave this speech in Korean, and then they did like this reveal to his translator, and it was like his translator became this like beloved character last award season. So it was such a great like I had a big smile on my face seeing her, and then also the language of that shot is like, here she is, you know, like it knows that you were hoping to see her kind of thing. That was I really liked that, and it was a nice like shot as well. It was very nicely lit and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I just, oh God, I just love he just looks so cuddly, like
like a little bear,
yeah,
a little puppy that you want to take home, a little border collie that you saw at the market earlier on today.
Did you have any favorite weird aesthetic moments?
I don't know if it was my favorite moment, but I actually quite liked the Glenn Close has like weird pop culture, like weird specific pop culture knowledge of like past Oscar winners. I don't know, it just says something about like her that she's kind of not like a nerd, but you know, like she cares about things that are kind of like irrelevant to people, and she's not just like a famous celebrity who's like, I don't give a shit who was nominated for best song. She's like, I know this exactly because I love the Oscars. Even though they don't love me back.
I do have to report that part was scripted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they've confirmed since then that part was scripted. So they did a segment where Lil Rel went around and played like a segment from like Oscar songs and was like, was this a nominee, a winner, or was it not nominated? Played a few songs, like Purple Rain was one, and they're like, yeah, it's a fucking travesty, it wasn't nominated. It actually wasn't eligible, to be fair, but another song from the soundtrack, I think, was nominated or even won, but Purple Rain wasn't specifically written for the movie Purple Rain, so it wasn't eligible. But he went around a few, and a lot of them looked like they didn't want to take part in it, and then they played this song, Da Butt, and Glenn Close was like, because Lil Rel was like, oh, you're probably not going to know this, and she was like, no, I know that, and as you say, like, rattled off the name of the song, and that it wasn't nominated, or that it didn't win. And then she got up and like twerked, and they've come out since and said like, that was scripted, but no one knew Glenn Close was going to get up and dance like that. And everyone was like, what the fuck is going on? and she said that it was like,
cut to commercial.
The table she was sitting at was like Daniel Kaluuya and a couple other people. And they were like, bro, like get up and dance when you do it. It'll be so funny. And then they just like egged her on. She maybe had a bit to drink, but yeah, her like rattling off the stats about it was unfortunately scripted.
Oh man, that changes everything. It's my least favorite part of
the whole. AJ, as the person who asked the question, do you have an answer in mind?
Yeah, I liked that when like so many acceptance speeches and monologues from winners and stuff took time to sort of acknowledge the craziness of the last year or so, and including one film which is like a Groundhog Day, but you get killed by a cop every day.
Two Distant Strangers.
Yeah, one best short, was that it?
Live action short, yeah, it's on Netflix.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and so, and like that's one example of some pretty like calculated and at times would have been considered risky opinions to come out with. And then the Humanitarian Award went to Tyler Perry, and he got up and talked about how he refused to hate anyone, and he listed off several like races and minority groups that he refused to hate. And then he also mentioned police and then quickly moved on to the next. It was very funny to like, because you just know everyone in that room would have been like, yeah.
Because he went like, he's like, I refuse to hate anyone because of the color of their skin or their sexuality. And everyone starts clapping. Yeah. And he's like, oh, that they're a cop or that. And it's like, everyone's already clapping. Then they're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. And just in terms of Tyler Perry himself, like, first of all, you're winning a humanitarian award and you then take the time to thank the police who had been like already derided in the show.
I think as well, the thing that like, even if you're not like ACAB and or whatever, it's like the fact is that because the whole thing of people were like, blue lives matter, and it's like there's no such thing as a blue life, as a blue life.
Exactly.
Because like you're not born a cop, and it's different than sexuality or race.
Yes.
Which is the main point, even if you're not like regardless of how you feel about cops. You're not stuck as a cop.
Yeah.
So speaking of aesthetic changes, one that wasn't so great was it worked sometimes but not always, but as they were reading out the nominees, normally, you know, they would show like a reel or like we talked about
the
Oscar scenes.
The reels.
And they did them for some and not for others. Like they didn't
they
do
They did
them
it when it was a film nominated but nothing else. So if it was Best Picture, the short films, the documentary, foreign film, they all got clips. But when it was a person or a craft,
For the actors, I like, you know what, like while it's fun to guess what the scene shown will be, it was kind of cool being like hearing the stories of the people and how they got there. Like, again, like didn't always work. It depended on who was doing it. Laura Dern decided to like talk to the person, and they had to awkwardly like turn around and be like, "Yeah, thanks, Laura Dern." But yeah, for things like makeup and hairstyling and costume design, production design, it's like, we need to see these.
Yeah.
Because normally it's like, you get like a little sketch and then the sketch blends into something that's on screen. And it's like, that's always cool to see, but it's weird to be like, oh yeah, trust me, they did real good hairstyling.
Oh, I would go further than saying it's real cool to see. I would argue it's the whole point of the show. Like, yeah. I was just baffled. I was like, well, fuck. Like, I don't know what the costume and hairstyling looked like in this random film I haven't seen. Like, it was so frustrating. It took out a magic out of the Oscars. And I was just like, this is so strange. And as you say, Richard, I know we kind of dunk on whenever an actor does an Oscar scene, but it's still like, well, I still want to see it. I still want to see an example. Not just because I want to see... you know, I want to judge them up and say, did they deserve it? But like, if I've seen the film, I want to relive the magic. I want to be reminded of why they're nominated.
And also, there's kind of like a joy in seeing like, ah, you thought that was the best scene in the movie too? Like,
I remember
for Black Klansman, how we were talking about like, surely it has to be the scene because like he has, Adam Driver I'm talking about, he had the like the big scenes in the film where he's shouting and everything like that. But the moment where he is like looking at his Ku Klux Klan membership card and is saying like, I am Jewish, but I've never thought about it. But for the last week, that's all I've been able to think about. And it was like, and we kind of all picked that up as being like, oh, that's, it's such a good moment in that film. And then that was his Oscar scene, and we were like, yes, like this is this is his best part of the film. So yeah, shit like that's cool to just get that kind of validation, or to know that that's being recognized when you feel like it's like this little, you know.
And it's in some ways it's like good, it's good advertising for films as well, you know. Like people watch the Oscars and like, yeah, the hairstyling does look sick, we can go watch this movie.
yeah. And also, I just wanted to see what they were going to pick for Maria Bakalova's Oscar scene
For Borat.
Yeah, man.
And speaking of which, Brad Pitt butchered her name, a name that I would argue is actually very easy to pronounce. He said Maria Bakalova or something. Yeah. And I was like, are you not like vetted on this beforehand? Do they not go, okay, Brad Pitt, here's how to pronounce all these people's names just so you don't get it wrong?
Well, and he nailed Yuna Zhang, and she commented on the fact that he got it right.
The harder name to say.
Yeah, but also Regina King called it Barat too.
Barat! spoken like someone who's never heard or seen of Borat.
Yeah.
Like, so insane. Like, is it possible that Regina King doesn't know what Borat is? Like, because the way she pronounced it, it's like she assumed it was some kind of, like, actually Eastern European like war character piece.
Well, because she read, like, the entire title and kind of like had a bit of a like, yeah, I'm reading the whole title kind of moment, and it was like, yeah, maybe she just didn't get it. Like,
I don't think Regina King knows what Borat is.
What or who? One of the things as well is that, like, because the cinema is the, like, place was so small, you sort of got the feeling that Brad Pitt was directly eyeballing Maria at the same time as mispronouncing her name. There's no like hiding from it either. She's like, yeah, you just mispronounced my fucking name.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do next? Not give me an Oscar?
That's good.
Yeah, so let's talk about some winners for a bit. So first awards of the night were for the writing, and the adapted screenplay went to The Father, and this was one of those, like, because that was surely a lock for Nomadland, and that was one that was like, damn, well, that's a surprise. What was even more of a surprise was how hot Florian Zeller is.
yeah, is he the one with like heaps of hair?
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, I feel like all I was watching during his speech was like, man, that guy's really chosen a haircut.
Yeah.
Motherfucker got locks.
As a man who's going bald, I was like, bastard. Oh.
Well, that's where all your hair went.
Paris, France.
there's Emerald Fennell, or Fennell, I think it was being pronounced on the night, was, she won for original screenplay, which was cool, for Promising Young Woman, of course. And one of the other early awards of the night, which is always one of the first, is Supporting Actor, which went to Daniel Kaluuya, who gave a great speech. He got up there and was like, yeah, I just want to thank God, and then like took a moment and I was like, okay. But then and then they had his mum and sister watching from London, and he's like, my parents had sex, like, and then and you could see, oh, the reaction was so funny, because his mum was like, what the fuck is he talking about? And his sister was like, oh, gross. Like
put fuck, Daniel, shut up! Gross!
It was actually like that. It was such a, like, real reaction. It was so funny. And then he said, like, a couple of days after, he's like, no, I've been dodging my mum's calls. He's like, I don't want to talk to her yet.
She did look hugely disappointed. Oh my God,
like it was a very, like, you're gonna get your ass whooped. Like,
winning an award for portraying Fred Hampton, like this insanely influential, important public figure, and then your speech is like, my parents had sex.
There's the odd 1-2 punch of production design and cinematography going to Mank. Cinematography going to Mank was a strange one, and the way these awards were kind of spaced out, because it was assumed Nomadland would get a couple more, but yeah, Nomadland got the most awards with only three, which is the first time since 2006 where the most awards won was 3.
And I blame the order of the award presentation.
Yeah, we'll get to that because that's kind of the big thing of the night. But I didn't mind director being in the middle.
I disagree. Director tells you who's going to win, dude.
It doesn't though. Like it's especially recently, a director and Best Picture have gone to different films like more often than not in the last decade. I think might be wrong, but it feels like
I think it still feels momentous though, and it felt weird to be watching the Oscar for like Best Animated Short after I already know who's won Best Director.
Yeah, I get what you mean, but I and maybe it doesn't need to be director, but normally there is like a lull in the ceremony as those kind of smaller awards are given out.
I love that lull.
I can go and get some snacks in that lull.
Yeah.
Call out from the kitchen, who won it? And they're like, oh, it was Colette. And you're like, oh, yeah, haven't seen it.
Other fun speeches, Yuna Zhang for Minari. That was an incredible speech.
So good.
She was so good. Like, she essentially got up there and was like, yeah, I mean, the least you could do is give me this Oscar after you fucking butchered my name all awards season. Like, she was fantastic. And it was that thing of like, she is kind of like her character from the first half of Minari.
Yeah, after
like,
all this time.
Yeah. I also love that she just like walks off with Brad Pitt and then just like forcibly grabs
his arm. She was looking for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was looking for him. She's like, where are you?
Yeah.
Brad.
It was, I think Uther Dean said on Twitter about how, like, she has this energy of, like this is how, like, every other country feels when it's, like, they give, you know, some Western actor an award in, like, Japan, and they go there and they're like, oh, okay, like, thanks, whatever. And it's like, yeah, and now she's coming to the Academy Awards and being like, okay, yeah, I mean, I've been a pretty fucking big deal in Korea for like 50 years, but okay.
Bong Joon-ho did the same thing last year as well.
Yeah, yeah. It is very fun. Before we get to the big kind of controversy of the night, I do have a couple other things I want to bring up. The In Memoriam. That's a big thing for us here at the Cult Popture Podcast that every year, and it was obviously Chadwick Boseman was the last name, who's the only name who got like more than a second. What a fucking terrible In Memoriam.
It was so weird because garbage. It wasn't standard either.
Yeah.
It was like it would fast forward in bits and then it would slow down so that it was like clear who they cared about and who they didn't care about.
It was like, so the other thing with the In Memoriam section was normally it's put to some very slow song. Often there'll be a live performer, but they put it to Stevie Wonder's As, which is a reasonably fast tempo song. They're clearly trying to cut to the tempo of the song. And I don't mind having a little bit more of an upbeat song, but when we've just watched Glenn Close twerk and in this like, you know, an unnecessary segment which felt like very out of place with the rest of the ceremony, to then feel like the In Memoriam section was on fast forward is like, this is actually just disrespectful to these people.
Yeah,
like, and going through, because it was a lot of names that I was like, oh fuck yeah, they died, like that, because quite often you'll be like half the names you will never heard of. There'll be a set designer or something like that. They, you know, have great credits to their name, but not exactly a household name. Whereas there's quite a few like decently famous people in there, and like Christopher Plummer's name was on screen for less than a second. Like there were some that were some got their 1 second of the spotlight, but it was so quick. You could either look at their face or read the name. For a lot of them, you couldn't do both.
Outside of my cult popture life, I'm a freelance video editor, and I've been given gigs before. Well, I haven't been given In Memoriam gigs, but I've been given gigs that are like of the same editing.
Yeah, give us like a reel of a bunch of things.
Yeah, exactly. And I gotta say, seeing the fallout, I'm just like, ugh. I could have seen myself editing something that looks like this. Like, just in the vacuum of no feedback or no public feedback,
yeah.
I could see editing that, sending that to the client, and then being like, great, thanks, send us your invoice. Just because you don't know. Like, if they go, all right, here's the list.
Cut
we need
to the
a,
beat.
Here are the pictures. Yeah, cut to the beat, and you have to end with Chadwick Boseman. I feel like that's all they were told. Mm. Like, there can't have been anything, any other information they were given.
Yeah. Another fun thing about the editing is that the they still made all the technical people sit at the back, even though they had like more limited seating. And I saw a thing that said about the it's funny putting the editors at the back when they so when they win their award, you have to wait for them to walk down, and they're the people that are thinking this could be cut out. but yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in the ceremony. The Chloe Zhao, obviously the second woman to win Best Director, which actually was censored in China. They didn't play, they cut away from, they didn't play her win.
Why?
Because she's spoken out against the Chinese government.
It's like 8 years ago and she didn't even really say anything that bad, eh?
Yeah, and but it was one of those things, it got picked up on like social media there, and yeah, they blocked her name from appearing on Chinese social media. And yeah, so it was just pretty shitty.
Very cool and normal thing to do. Thank you, Chinese government.
All right, so let's get to the big controversy of the night. The award for Best Picture went to Nomadland. That's not what's controversial. What's controversial is that it was the third to last award. Like, we came back from an ad break and then they were like, here are the nominees for Best Picture. And it's like, oh, because they didn't do the thing they normally do where they're like, a woman lives in a van and goes around as a nomad. This is Nomadland. And they'll play a little, you know, thing from it. And they'll do that throughout the night so that you kind of are familiar with the films. They did it and they're like, oh, they're doing all of them right now. That's weird. Oh, why is she holding an envelope? Why is she reading out who won? What? No. Like, and we were still waiting for the awards for Best Actor and Best Actress. And then Renee Zellweger came out and it's like, because by this point, everyone had said, oh, they want to end on Chadwick Boseman. And then Renee Zellweger comes out, and it's like, well, that means they're doing Best Actor first. And then they did a small break from tradition that not many people are talking about because of what happened next. But the previous Best Actress winner read out the award for Best Actress. Normally, they swap. And then Frances McDormand won, and kind of one of those, like, it feels like the obvious choice, but it was also kind of like an upset. Like, Carey Mulligan and Viola Davis were kind of like, oh, it could go to either of them, and maybe they cancelled each other out. And Frances McDormand just won, which she's now the seventh person to win a three acting Oscars. And after Katharine Hepburn, the only person to win three lead actress. Awards, and I think Daniel Day-Lewis is the only man with three lead acting Oscars. So, you know, she's statistically one of the best actors of all time. Good on her. She is incredible.
Well, according to the Academy Awards, which makes several other questionable decisions, but
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's what, statistically speaking.
Do you reckon her award acceptance speech was the weirdest of anyone who's won three Oscars?
It was. She
was
howled.
Was it the one where she howled?
Yeah, she howled.
Yeah.
I was like, is this a reference to Nomadland that I don't remember?
And she's also the, I think the first woman and maybe the first person to win an Oscar for Best Picture and Best Actress on the same night.
Damn.
Yeah, because she was a producer on Nomadland.
Right, next to each other as well. And she already just did a speech for Nomadland.
Yeah,
and
then came out, I was like, well, I'll just speak as the wolf.
Yeah, yeah. Her acceptance for Best Picture of Nomadland was the acceptance speech of someone who is in no way expecting to get Best Actress in 2 minutes.
I've already used up all my good material.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just howl again.
But yeah, then Joaquin Phoenix came out and delivered the last award of the night, only the second time that the last award of the night hasn't been Best Picture. The first time was in 1972 when Charlie Chaplin won an honorary Oscar, and they say that for last, which is good that they did because he got a 12-minute standing ovation.
Damn.
Before making a speech. And that was his first time to the US in 20 years. There was like a period of time where he was very unpopular and he went to Switzerland and lived in isolation for 20 years and then won this honorary Oscar and then died only like 5 years later. But anyway, Joaquin Phoenix came out and it was like, at this point, you know, everyone's getting ready for the big emotional Chadwick Boseman tribute. Why else would you save that for last?
It's loaded in the vision mixer queue.
Yeah.
Like, it is. Yeah. You know, like, Stephen Sondheim? Who directed it?
The director was actually Glenn Weiss, but Steven Soderbergh was one of the producers.
Soderbergh. Yeah. Yeah, they're sitting in the vision mixer. They're like, all right, load the Bozeman tribute clip, please. They're ready. They're primed to hit play and have what I'm sure was a very touching tribute.
Yeah, and you know, his Chadwick Boseman's wife was there, who was a widow, I should say, who, you know, has been making these beautiful speeches all throughout award season. And then Joaquin Phoenix goes, all right, and the winner is Anthony Hopkins. All right, the Academy accepts his award on his behalf. Thank you, good night, cut to credits. A few things there.
few things to unpack.
So first of all, obviously the award in, you know, what some would call an upset, didn't go to Chadwick Boseman and went to Anthony Hopkins, who was asleep in Wales, who it's now being alleged he offered to Zoom into that. He's like, you know, if I win, I can do a Zoom call. And they said, no, you have to come to one of these places. And he said, well, I just won't go then. He also wasn't there for his nomination in Two Popes, but the man's 83 years old. It's a global pandemic. You can understand why he wouldn't want to travel. And he's also, his win makes him the oldest acting winner of all time. And he's also the first openly autistic winner, because he came out, I don't know, as autistic in 2017. So he's won an award before, but hadn't been diagnosed, or at least hadn't made it public. Which people have pointed out that the award season started with Sia's film Music getting all this bashing because of her refusal to be like, no, autistic actors aren't good enough. That's why I didn't hire them. And then the last award given in award season was to an autistic actor.
Yeah, there is some poetry in it, but yeah, you can always find the poetry in anything with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's just as much poetry, I guess, in Chadwick Boseman winning.
And so this is the thing, the whole Chadwick Boseman thing. It's disappointing because, like we all said, Anthony Hopkins gives an incredible performance in The Father.
I prefer his performance to Chadwick Boseman's in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, he didn't not deserve to win, but, you know, it would have been nice to give an award to Chadwick Boseman and to have this nice moment. But the thing is, that moment would have been nice no matter when it happened in the ceremony. It could have been the first award of the night and people would still be talking about it today if it had happened. And it could have been the last award before Best Picture, and it still would have been this huge emotional moment. The reshuffling the awards to have this last was the unsinkable, you know, Titanic kind of thing. It was that, like, cocky and confident of a call on something that's not at all, like, it's a sure thing in the terms of, like, it seemed to be a sure thing in the terms of, like, the gambling world, but it's like, there's always a chance when there's five possibilities. It's not a sure thing. Like,
especially at the Oscars, there's always a chance to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And we know from the La La Land Moonlight thing that they don't, you know, what's the right word? Fix the results.
Well, yeah, they don't know. Because people have been saying on social media, why would they put it last if he wasn't going to win? And it's like, literally the people making the show had no idea until Joaquin Phoenix read it out. They were hedging their bets and they made a very bold call. But yeah, the only like one, maybe two people in the world knew who won before Joaquin Phoenix read it out. And that's the accountants at PricewaterhouseCoopers.
To be in the director room during that last moment, because you would have heard the most, like, lack of humility from people who are trying to create a piece of entertainment and not considering that, you know, a dead man is what's on the table, and an old man winning is you know, this good thing. Like, you can, I can just hear them backstage going, fuck, what do you mean it wasn't, like, complete lack of awareness, complete lack of tenderness and tact, just like seeing them all as chess pieces. I would have done that. I would have completely forgotten that we're talking about real people and just been completely blown away by that result.
Because the other thing about it is that it's now come out as well that, like, talking of the directors, it's now, like, it's been alleged that apparently Olivia Colman was supposed to do a speech to accept on his behalf, because ever since the Marlon Brando incident when he won and a Native American woman came on stage and said, like, treat Native American people better, and everyone was like, boo, boo, that they said, oh, you now have to, like, actually tell us who's going to accept it on your behalf kind of thing beforehand. You can't just get someone to do it. And apparently, yeah, Olivia Colman had been nominated and was going to do a speech, and I'm sure she would have paid tribute to Chadwick Boseman, that, you know, the elephant in the room kind of thing. But, yeah, it seems like they just said, fuck, cut to credits. They just panicked and got out of there. Because Anthony Hopkins uploaded a video the next day essentially saying, I had no idea I was going to win. This is genuinely like such an honor and such a surprise. And I want to take a moment to just talk about mention Chadwick Boseman. That was like a huge loss taken far too soon.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But I had no idea this was coming. And very, very humble, very nice speech, but it was such a bizarre choice.
Yeah, it is weird not to have someone live come up and, like, you know, deal with what everyone's thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it would have been nice for someone to have had the opportunity to have come up and said something, you know, in tribute to his life or something.
The whole show was borderline unethically inspired by Chadwick Boseman. Like, it was part of the advertising for it. It was part of the markup, the like art style of the, like, the branding of the awards this year was, like, vaguely like Wakandan in a way. And, you know, like, it felt him not winning. Now you look back at all these decisions that were made and you're like, geez, this was, I mean, again, they didn't know, so it's hard to specifically place blame, but you can't help but feel like there's an awkward exploitation thing going on. And here's the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what probably should have happened. They should have nominated Chadwick Boseman for Best Supporting Actor and Daniel Kaluuya for Best Lead Actor.
Mm.
Because then both of those guys are going to win those categories. Sorry, Anthony Hopkins. I think Daniel Kaluuya would win over Anthony Hopkins if they were in the same category. And the fact that, like, they are... That's, like, Daniel Kaluuya was the lead in Judas and the Black Messiah, and Chadwick Boseman isn't really the lead in Ma Rainey's Black
Bottom. Yeah, I mean, he's the lead male, you'd say. But
but he's a supporting character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there isn't... I wouldn't say there is a main character in Ma
Rainey. What's Ma Rainey?
No, but it's not even really.
You had to say
either,
her name to get it.
Well, I had to say the Black Messiah as well, and the Black Messiah wasn't nominated for lead actor.
The sad thing about all this going on is that this is some exec's decision to reshuffle the show like that, and now you've ruined, like, because now the story of Chadwick Boseman ends with, oh, and then he didn't win an Oscar and they made a huge fucking deal about it, and it went to Anthony Hopkins. Anthony Hopkins giving the performance of his career at 83 and winning an Oscar is now, oh, just fucking stole it from Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah,
Nomadland's Oscar, the historic Oscar wins for Chloe Zhao and winning Best Picture is now like, yeah, that was a fucking weird ceremony. They didn't even give it to them last. Like, for what I thought up until the In Memoriam, which happened, you know, three quarters of the way through, I thought this was such an inventive, like, clever ceremony, and the wins were surprising enough to keep you on your seat, but people who were deserving it were winning, and then the end of the show just stumbled at the finish line. Like, literally, if they just swapped the, like, Best Picture and Best Actor, people would still be looking back on this fondly, I think, and they would say, oh yeah, that was such a shame. But it wasn't like they wouldn't have had that overconfidence of the Academy, because that's the whole thing we always talk about, is that the Academy is so up themselves, and like and the Oscars do this every year where it's like it has to go a certain way, and they love having these little narratives they tell, and they don't always work, and this is what happens. I was thinking up until a certain point, like, what are we going to talk about in the postmortem? you know?
They're like, sort of bringing this plane into land.
Yeah, like, and then, and I was thinking, I was like, it would be good if we had another La La Land Moonlight situation that we could really debrief.
And then we got three in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's bizarre, and it's upsetting that they did it.
Yeah. Chadwick Boseman's legacy ends with a snub and an NFT.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you deserve better. I remember I was like, we were watching.
Sorry,
it.
Aaron, you said that like you don't know who Chadwick Boseman is. Like, I can so imagine like someone listening to this conversation who's not interested in movies and just listening to like, yeah, you deserve better. Anyway.
Anyway, I've got something else to say.
Can you guys just sign for this package, please?
I apologize for sounding insensitive. No, he 100% did deserve better. And that is the thing about the Academy, eh? Like I said before, just an extraordinary capacity to be both insensitive and to just like let you down. It's just like, I don't know, it's like a friend who's like always asking for money and you're like, no, no, he's turned his life around. This year is going to be the year.
Oh, yeah.
And then they ask you for more money and you're like, this wasn't the year.
Mm.
But yeah. we were watching a recorded version of it later on at night, and I think just before the 2/3 mark, yeah, my girlfriend's brother came in and he's like, you watching the Oscars? Yeah, it gets real weird in about 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, saying about Chadwick Boseman deserved better. It's not even that he deserved to win.
No.
It's just that it deserved better than what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Weird Oscars this
God,
year.
God, they'll be so stoked that they nominated Black Panther, eh?
They're that
close to the narrative being you don't even care about Chadwick Boseman. Like, no. We nominated Black Panther.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thank God.
But yeah, I mean, it is the thing of like, there's so many great actors that don't even have Oscar nominations, let alone wins. Glenn Close, look at her.
Yeah,
debut.
Look at the butt of Glenn Close, because she showed it off.
Yeah.
What else happened? Soul, I liked the acceptance speech for best score there, that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. It felt very much like, because John Batiste, it was the three of them, and it felt very much like Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross were like, hey, we've done this before, mate, you take it, you know? And not even in like a condescending way, it was just like, dude, talk for as long as you want. I don't even have anything to say. Yeah. Like, it wasn't. Yeah, they were quite happy to just sit back and because he gave a good speech and he was very clearly like very very touched by it.
Was that the guy who's just like giant?
I think it's
someone else.
Yeah, I mean, there's tall people there. It's Hollywood, baby.
I thought that it was strange that whenever they did show a clip from a movie, they would show like the bit you don't tell your friends about when you tell them to go see it.
Another round.
The clip they showed for Another Round, which won Best Foreign Film, is like, I don't want to call it the spoiler, but it's like the best part of the film.
And it's the very end of the film.
The movie builds right up to that moment, and it's this amazing release of catharsis, and that's the clip they showed. And it was like, oh, okay. There was another example. Onward's clip was like twist ending of Onward as well.
Yeah.
And there were a few other examples, and it was sort of like, and for the ones I hadn't seen, I was like, is this just the best part of the movie?
Yeah.
You know, my final thoughts are that the Oscars, every year they're so close, and then something stupid will happen, and they knock themselves right back to where they were when they started. Although I will say, at least it wasn't exactly the same problem plaguing them this year. No one's really talking about like racism or anything.
Oh yeah,
like
it was their most diverse set of nominees and winners. And
I'm sure that was very intentional and contrary to what...
You can't even let them have that.
Contrary to what edgelords will tell you on the internet, I don't think it's a bad thing that it was more diverse. But they still have so many things going wrong. Like, because the new criteria for nominations that dropped like last year, like that didn't really seem to play into...
I think that comes into effect next year.
Okay, never mind then.
But speaking of that, that is a good point. Next year, we're going to have 10 nominees for Best Picture. They've bumped it back up to 10. It was, from 2009 to 2010, it had to be 10. And then after that, I think they made it anywhere between 5 and 10. It's however many pass a threshold. But it was after The Dark Knight was snubbed in 2008. They were like, well, we probably should have nominated that, but there wasn't really room for it. Okay, let's open up the pool so we can, you know, have a more kind of diverse range of films. And then I believe Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close got nominated, and they were like, maybe this is too many. and so, but yeah, back to 10, which will be cool. And that's part of, like, yeah, you mentioned these equity and inclusion initiatives.
I think it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But so there's four things, four different categories or things you have to do, and you have to do two of them. And so it's to do with the film has to be about or star people of color or issues around that, or it's and if not that, you then have to cast it, or the studio has to employ people like that, and then I can't remember what the other one is, but yeah, you only have to fit two of those four. So it's essentially every main studio does that, and if you look at the guidelines, they're fucking bare minimum kind of thing. You would hope that every studio, and on a cursory glance of CEOs and whatnot, I was like, okay, from what I can tell, all the main studios, especially the ones that are vying for Oscars, pass this. So they only have to do one of the other three, and it's like, literally, if you're just on your film, you're hire, it's two department heads that are minorities. So it's if you have, and a lot of them lean female anyway, you're probably more likely to find a makeup and hairstyling head of department that's a woman. And so it's a lot of these people kind of went up in arms about it. It's look at Shawshank Redemption, that wouldn't have passed because it doesn't have any women in it. It's but you look at it and it's actually very not hard to, but most films are going to pass these by accident. But it's less a thing about, you can only tell films that are about minorities or whatever. It's just hire some women and some minorities. It's not that fucking hard. But yeah, and part of this inclusion and diversity thing is Barbie get up to 10 nominees.
Well, I'll hold off on my opinion then until we see what those 10 nominees are.
Yeah, and but it'll be nice for us as well to be easily splitting it into two.
We'll have already seen Dune, so we won't have to rewatch
the,
that.
We won't have to rewatch the winner.
Dune actually isn't on Variety's picks for best picture nominees next year. It's That's currently ridiculous. Picking House of Gucci, directed by Ridley Scott, as the winner, which is the Adam Driver and Lady Gaga picture, which
apparently the Gucci family hate because they were like, we would never be this ugly.
So they're picking, Variety's picking that for best picture and director. Best actor to go to Will Smith for King Richard. Best actress, Ana de Armas for Blonde. Supporting Idris Elba for The Harder They Fall. Supporting actress, Olga Meredes in The Heights. It's funny that
this is so strange to even be talking about this.
I love looking at these a year out, being like, yeah, this is being the Ricardos, Amazon Studios, that'll probably win best film editing.
how do they know?
But I love that it's they're calling best original score, you know, The Power of the Dog, which I'm that's Jane Campion's new film, and Johnny Greenwood's scoring it, and it's like, yeah, Johnny Greenwood's a fucking good scorer. Okay, sweet.
Do you reckon it's based on them seeing previews or little clips, or they're just
none of these films are finished yet?
The awards for their picks for best original song, they're picking No Time to Die from No Time to Die as the winner, but the nominees are Unknown Possible Song from Dear Evan Hansen, Encanto, House of Gucci, and Tick Tick Boom. they just say, yeah, there'll probably be a song on these. They're even saying best achievement in stunts, not yet an official category. That'll go to Shang-Chi. Best achievement in casting, not yet an official category. That'll go to Don't Look Up.
Wait, so are they thinking of actually having those categories, or is that
those are
lock?
The ones they push for every year. Stunts would be cool, but there's a fear that it would push people to do unsafe things just to try and win it. Best achievement in casting should probably have an award, because if you watch the opening credits for any film, casting is the only one that appears in the opening credits, which doesn't have a corresponding Academy Award.
I'm fascinated by awarding that job. That's so interesting.
Mm.
What a cool area of filmmaking to then make mainstream, like, knowledgeable to the mainstream.
Yeah, because you think about, like, directing and acting and then like ensemble performances, like, so a lot of that is casting, and when you find people that have great chemistry and things like that, there's so many facets to it, and it's a really interesting job that I would love to know more about.
Well, hey, let's all save this for next Oscar season, because this is it's time to wrap up the Cult Popshire Oscar season, and I wish I could think of a really funny joke of how to wrap it up with something as, like, lackluster as what happened this year, but I can't. All I can... Maybe... No, this is it! This... Me saying this...
What would have been good was to save Aaron's car accident story to the end.
How do you? That's not a lackluster story.
But just, like, why are they fucking doing this again? Why are they talking about... about streets in Christchurch.
So thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you like this episode, come and join us on the Discord. There'll be a link in the show notes. Come join the Discord. Let us know what you thought of the Oscars. And you can also like us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. There's two YouTube accounts, one for the podcast and one for the YouTube channel. There's a new video coming out tomorrow on the Cult Popshire YouTube channels, and I'm very excited about it. So look forward to that. It's about Borat. And yeah, it's about Borat, this little foreign film that I wanted
Borat
to highlight,
starring Maria Balaclava.
And stay tuned for the post-credit scene, which is coming up after this music.
And thanks for joining. We'll see you next year, Aaron.
Bye.
All right, you are listening to the post-credits scene. This is a segment that comes at the end of the show where if you donate $5 or more to our Patreon, patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credits scene. Richard, tell me the question, tell me the thing, the topic. Who's it from and what
from
are we talking about?
Paul Turner, who's another recent Patreon. We've just recorded this at the same time as last week's Patreon post-credits.
We're in the same room, which we wouldn't have been for the episode just listened to.
So, yeah, there's a lot of chemistry you'll be hearing that's been absent from the episode you just heard. So, Paul Turner asks, if you were to rank all the sub-franchises of the MCU and X-Men series against your franchise list, where would you place them? So, just the three Cap movies, four Avengers movies, original X-Men trilogy, First Class, Quadrilogy, and so on. I don't know that we'll actually, like, tell you the exact position, but I can tell you, like, where they would be and whether they would fall above the Nymphomaniac concept. So Iron Man trilogy, that would be one of the higher ones. I do kind of have a soft spot, like, Iron Man 2, while it's, you know, the worst one people have, and you and I both like Iron Man 3 as well, which is a somewhat controversial stance. It would be above the Nymphomaniac constant, but it would be lower than Captain America. I think Captain America is probably the strongest trilogy we have so far.
That there's almost a duality or a triality to Cap, Thor, and Iron Man.
Yeah.
Because Cap is, like, consistent across the board.
Yeah.
Iron Man is, like, a strong start, which none of the other two have, in my, like, at least critically.
Yeah.
And Thor is a strong ending, which Iron Man doesn't have. Like, Iron Man and Thor are the opposite of each other in a way.
Yeah, and when we're getting a fourth Iron Man and a fourth Captain America movie as well.
A fourth Iron Man.
A fourth Thor, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, fourth Captain America was just announced
so
today.
The average will be bumped up, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, Thor would probably go around the Nymphomaniac constant.
A lot of heavy lifting from Ragnarok.
Well, and I like the first Thor.
I don't think people do, though.
Yeah, fair. But Ragnarok's doing a lot of the heavy lifting, and I would say Thor 1 is a more good than bad movie, and it's more like, it's less like Ragnarok's doing all this heavy lifting, it's more like the second one is just pulling it down kind of thing. Mm. And then Guardians would be pretty high. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
What are the Doctor Strange doesn't have one yet. A sequel yet.
Avengers.
The Avengers movies would be pretty high.
I'd probably put them above Cap.
Yeah, but then again, they have the
have one bad one, but three good ones, which is the same as Cap.
Yeah, true.
If anything, I think Captain America 1's quite weak. So
Spider-Man is Yeah, pretty
such a complicated question, man. I don't know where to put the Spider-Man movies. I've seen a lot of hate for Far From Home since its release that that didn't occur to me at all. And I think as well I've become more aware of kind of the deviousness of making the MCU Spider-Man movies about like a richer Peter Parker who's fighting the working class. Like, feel very uncomfortable about that. Yeah. And didn't realize that till much after we recorded the episode. What other series are there? Is that it within the MCU?
Yeah, I think it might be. Other ones don't have sequels yet. Ant-Man.
Probably above Thor, lower than the others.
They're fun. Yeah, Thor and Spider-Man are both just... I mean, sorry. Ant-Man and Spider-Man are both very just, like, serviceable, I think. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like we're these... Like, would any of them be in the top 10 in our ranking, do you think?
No. Maybe Avengers.
Yeah, maybe Avengers. Yeah, I've been thinking about Infinity War a lot, though. That's a good movie.
Mm. Let's go watch it.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about X-Men. Should we
The
X-Men, I would say the prequel X-Men's, despite having two bad ones at the end, I enjoyed the first two a lot more than any of the other X-Men's.
Yeah, yeah.
And Logan's the only good Wolverine. And the original X-Men's kind of dated.
Yeah, because
Deadpool's probably the most consistent of them all.
If you count the Wolverine trilogy, it's almost like another Nymphomaniac constant because it's like Logan is as good as Origins Wolverine is bad, and then Wolverine is a perfectly neutral movie kind of thing. Although even Origins Wolverine I kind of like in some ways.
It's an answer to last week's question.
Yeah.
All right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.